This is a digital recording of the Senate's Executive Committee of April 9th, 2015.
We have a lot on our agenda today. More apparently will be on the agenda 2 weeks from today. I'd like to get rolling.
Keep
distracting those folks.
She's talking to her.
Sorry about those
folks. I'm sorry. All right. So I want to add one item to the agenda, and actually I'd like to put it in where number four is and move number four to number five and five to number six. So that's the reorganization task force and its readiness to come in front of the Senate. Somehow or other that slipped our minds until the packet got out. And I was wondering if there are any other types certain that we need to put on the agenda or any other changes. Yeah.
Does Kendall have a time certain that was conveyed to Dean Ayala?
Oh, yes. 3:15?
Okay.
Yes, that's there. Any others? Okay, then why don't we roll along? I don't have lots of business. I'll have a lot more the next time you folks get to see me, which won't be at the beginning of the Senate next week, because that's when I'll be at that Council of Academic Senate Chairs. We will be revisiting the issue of the process of how that community college bachelor's stuff happened, but we'll be leaving the content of that decision, I think, to the statewide Senate folks who are dealing with that. But since the chairs were part of the people that were caught up in the swirl of how do we react in time, at least somebody's got to speak for this for the various faculty. We've got at least pushback on that. And that'll go to both Kim White and Bryce Harris, the chancellor of the community college system, because we really don't feel like deliberate enough time is made with that. There's a handful of other things that are coming up, but I don't have enough specifics on those to really bring them forward. Let's see. On the GMC side of things, I got to go to a really, really nice thing yesterday. One of the academic integration grants. This one was organized by Ben Ford and Brian Wilson. Ben Ford out of mathematics and Brian Wilson out of music. It was called Harmonious Equations, and it was wonderful up and down. I saw Andrew there too. Yeah, and actually I saw a number of faculty members there and students. And that was really reassuring. So it's exactly what we want to do with those things. And if we can have more things like that, it would be great. I'm out of town tomorrow, but Lynn Morrow has one that's music and neurology combo. So if you can make that, I strongly encourage you to do that.
Do you know where that is?
I think it's from... One to three. Yeah. Okay. So that's most of the stuff coming from me. Anybody have any questions, concerns, whatnot? Most of the other things will come out in various reports, including some of what happened at PDAC this morning. So jumping back to the order that we see on here, the minutes were circulated. Any comments on those, corrections, additions? That the recycling provost? Okay, so hearing no comments or concerns, we will adopt those as circulated. President's report. Ruben, do you have anything to report? Okay, any questions or comments for the president? All speak at once.
Okay. I could ask a question. I understand that the CSU was lobbying on Tuesday at the Capitol, and I'm wondering if you have any report on your meetings with the legislators or anyone else who might have talked to you on Tuesday.
We were both there. We know.
We close. Mm-hmm. A couple of each other. Were you there?
I was there.
I didn't see you.
usually it would have been funny if I have seen you too,
right?
And I have not seen you.
I think everybody we talked to, and we talked to every member of our delegation, is supportive of an augmentation to the CSU. But they don't know how much, and more importantly, what the governor's reaction would be. But, you know, support is there. Since that happened, today, I just read it, the speaker, no, the President Pro Tem, Kevin DeLeon, who spoke to my group, not, I don't know if he spoke to your group or not, but has introduced a bill, SB 15, which provides $75 million each to the CSU and the UC. In lieu of tuition increases, which is a big issue in the UC, and specifically to add a greater enrollment access. I haven't seen the bill, and the co-sponsor is Marty Block, who heads the Senate Higher Education Committee. At our meeting also, the chair of the Higher Education, Jose Medina from Riverside, also spoke, and again, very supportive in doing more. It's not clear what the $75 million, you know, at least at this moment, exactly, is it a base money, or is it a one-time? Again, I haven't looked at it that way. And what it will be very, what is very unclear is how is it going to get paid for. Obviously, there is going to be more money available in the legislature, probably about $2 billion more than predicted, somewhere around that figure. But I understand it. The governor's interest is probably had to do something about Proposition 98, who will get the bulk of that money, unless they do some trickery about it. And the governor wants to indeed reduce the debt load of the, and he hasn't made any positive movement, or if that were to pass, that it would approve of. Richard and I were talking and doing some numbers, you know. If that were to happen, 75 million roughly, if they give every campus its normal share, for us that's about $1.7 million. But will it have fences around it? It's not known. That's what it is. It's the beginning of a discussion. They are committed to having a budget passed by June 15. We will see in May, in the May revise, if the governor is moving toward any changes or not. But right now, it's not much support. Everybody loves you, and and they are willing to even put some money on the table, but it's not sure that there will be a table available in terms of the governor's providing the table.
Yes. Any other questions or comments? All right, then, let's move to the provost. Andrew, anything to report?
No, nothing today.
Any questions for the provost, Sam?
Do you have an update on faculty hires for next year?
We talked about it in cabinet. As of today, we're comfortable going forward with six. But the direction from the president is that both Larry and myself have to try and find a way to up that number more in line with the president's three-year plan. And as of today, we're comfortable with six. One of those will be in human development because that was the condition of a department taking that program.
Any other questions, comments? Yes.
I guess I could ask about that caveat about finding money for more. What are some, you could flesh that out?
Well, I think you heard at PBAC that there is a possibility that more money could come from the Chancellor's office if we do get some enrollment growth or we get the access growth we just had from the President. Also, trying to be very accurate about how much we can afford, most of the salary comes from two sources, the actual growth itself, and we've got 1%, and salary savings. The salary savings is a big unknown because we really, at this point, don't know who's retiring, who's stopping the first. So, you know, worst case scenario right now it's six, but I'm hoping that we will get more. Even internally, we'll find a way to increase that.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? I don't see our uncertain here yet, so how about we keep
just ask a clarifying question.
Yeah.
Are those, at this point, six new faculty hires on top of any replacements for retirements, or is that included in that?
At this point, it's including all the retirements we think we know about.
So it may not necessarily produce growth in faculty if we have six retirements.
Correct. Retirements have really slowed down. Usually the chances are if there's four retirements, we'll be coming lower, and then the extra would be the small amount of growth we got from the chances of it. So I don't think we'll go down. Well, we're still down, of course. Yeah. But
we'll replace the number at the top. Okay. So we do have our time certain here. So we're going to be going to business item number three. And we circulated most of the documents electronically, as I hope you saw in your email. And the reason for that was it cost $100 of copying to do it just for EPC. So one of the things I'm trying to experiment this week with is whether this is feasible to do at the Senate level. Because if it was $100 for them, it would be like $500 for the Senate. And I'd rather not kill that many trees. We do have one full hard copy here if we need to refer to it, especially for those who didn't bring devices to look at it. One of the things that we can get to this when we deal with that business item, I was a little concerned about everybody just printing it off at their department's expense. But anyway, so if you need to pull out your devices and pull up those documents, feel free to do that now.
Where are the documents again? Sir?
They were emailed to us.
Electronically, an email sent from Laurel to should have. So if you front on Axon, you should see. Because that's in the subject header.
Yeah.
And so I will hand this over to Melinda and Carlos since we're coming to their quarters.
Yes, thank you very much. So you have
emailed to you electronically, buried in your email, are all of the documents that go with this recommendation. But as you know, there has been a proposal that's come forth to discontinue the Candel program, and that program has made its way through various levels of governance review to EPC. You have in front of you in hard copy EPC's recommendation with regard to the proposed discontinuance. And as is noted in this recommendation, EPC voted to recommend support of the proposed discontinuance of Candel. The vote was 5 in favor, 2 against, and 1 abstention. And this recommendation document takes you through the history of the review of the proposal. It indicates the levels of review through which it moved, and then indicates that EPC held an initial hearing, at which point it was determined that we needed a larger public hearing, which was held on April 2nd. In advance of that, as I'm sure you're tired of me explaining, there were a lot of steps that EPC took to gather information, including making all the materials related to the proposal and additional documents received in relation to that proposal available on the Senate website. We created a blog for public comments. An announcement about posting on that blog was distributed to faculty as a whole. It was distributed to various stakeholder groups that we identified. And all of those materials were compiled and then brought to EPC's attention for the April 2nd hearing. In addition, on the April 2nd hearing, we had a couple of non-EPC members of the campus community attend who wanted to provide commentary as well. What I've included in this recommendation then, starting on the bottom of page 1, is a summary of EPC's discussion divided into factors that EPC felt were in support of discontinuance, the pros, so to speak, and then the cons, factors against discontinuance. Because as you can tell from the 5-2 decision, there was quite a bit of discussion, both pro and con. So you can see there are 4 factors each under those categories. And then the rest of the document, page 2-3, lists out all of the documents that EPC has compiled and that EPC is bringing forward to the Senate for their review. Because what happens now in the discontinuance process is that EPC's recommendation goes to Senate, and then Senate reviews the materials and makes a recommendation to the president. So one of the challenges, I think, today is in determining readiness for the Senate agenda is dealing with the bulk of the materials, that it's a quite bulky set of materials. Note that I also included, it was sent out separately from the email that Laurel sent out, the draft minutes from the public hearing that EPC had, because I think that they do a nice job of summarizing some of the initial issues, especially Dean Ayala's introductory statement at the beginning, I think is useful in those minutes. Note that those are draft minutes, and so if you deem that you think that they should go to Senate, I would want EPC to work on approving them electronically over the next few days so that we could get an approved set out to Senate. So what I think we should probably do now is, even though the purpose of today's, your consideration today is to see whether the item is ready in its form to go forward to Senate, I think to help you do that, it would probably be useful to hear from Dean Ayala, the author of the proposal, about some of the motivation for the proposal. So Dean Ayala, thank you for your attendance.
So today I present to you the proposal for discontinuance of the Candel program. And I'm not going to be able to do this.
Okay, go ahead. That's okay. We'll come back if you can. Okay?
Sure. He thought he could make it through. And basically, the people he needs to talk to are the other.
Okay. Should we put this on hold, Richard, or continue?
So why don't we hold on the option if he's able to come back in, and then we'll come back to it as soon as he's able to come. Okay. All right. So, I understand. Okay. So, why don't we go up to the statewide senators then? That's where we were. So.
I visited the Graduate Studies Committee today and the General Education Advisory Committee today to get feedback on statewide resolution on defining upper division GE, and a request from the statewide administration that we somehow distinguish between a master's and bachelor's degree in the CSU. So those were both interesting, productive meetings. And I thank the committees for that. Other than that, we have our interim teleconferences a week from tomorrow, so there's nothing else to report.
Any questions for our statewide senators?
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying enough attention. What did you say about we need to distinguish between masters and bachelor's degrees? Is that what you said?
Yeah, there has been a move system-wide for about conversations for about 2 years almost about revising the Title V requirements for master's degrees, number of units and the nature of the courses and units in residency and that kind of thing. And there have been the statewide, Chris Mallon, I believe it's Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic Programs and Faculty Development, has been kind of the center of this thing, and she's got conflicting input from campuses and graduate deans and faculty and provosts and presidents about what those changes should be. So her idea is to start with some kind of list of criteria or a definition that distinguishes master's degrees from bachelor's degrees, and then to take that and turn it over to a task force that has is representative of all those constituencies and see whether or not Title V, the current language, matches that criteria or that definition or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't really have a name. Mm-hmm. So that's what that was about.
Okay.
And I'm on the Academic Affairs Committee that was asked for that definition. So going to my graduate faculty colleagues for assistance.
Okay, any further questions or comments? Okay, let's move along. Kirsten.
All right. So I will report that on Tuesday, right? On Tuesday, Structures and Functions appointed me as the faculty representative as the open position faculty representative to the Sonoma State Enterprises Board. I was not in the room at the time, but I was aware of the nomination. I'm actually delighted to be on it and looking forward to next year. The other thing that we have to report is that there were a number of lecturer write-in candidates. Two of those are both eligible and willing, and therefore we will have a runoff election to select the lecturer-senator that is vacant. Lecturer-senator position that is vacant currently. I'm not sure when the runoff will be. Yeah. That's right. The chair of Structures and Functions has yet to pass on the candidate names. And as soon as Laurel gets them, we will have that coming up. So let people know to look out for the email and to vote yet again.
So all of us, this is a position that all of us vote for.
Okay, otherwise, there's nothing else. Any questions?
Any questions for the vice chair? I'm set. So we will return to the Candel business item, and you have the floor.
Thank you. So I apologize for leaving. Some things are most important to take care of. And So today you received the proposed the report for discontinuance. Today I want to talk about three things in particular with respect to this to help you decide whether you think it's ready or not to move forward. I believe that it is. This was not an easy decision for our school to make. This was not something that we took lightly. It took a lot of effort to build, and we've had lots of successes within the Candela program. But when I encounter a difficult decision such as this, I think about who our students are. And in this case, that poses a very interesting problem, because who are our students in the Candela program, and how do they compare to our students here? Within the School of Education, we have 8 different programs, although we have 4 departments. Within one department, we have 2 programs, special ed and educational leadership. In educational leadership, I have 2 faculty members. I have Vicky Montero, and I have Paul Porter. Paul Porter was the founding director of Candela, and Vicky is the current co-director of Candela. And when I started thinking about our students, and when I began considering this situation, I thought about what are our students as they compare from here to the ones at UC Davis, and I immediately envisioned in my mind the 30 students who are currently sitting in a class, matriculated students at Sonoma State, currently sitting in a class to become principals. This is the primary faculty, the primary students that the faculty teach. They go through a program here, it lasts about a year, they can come back and visit us and get their secondary level principal's credential as well with us. And I think about those students, and I think about the amount of energy and time that we have focused on our small cohort of Candela students versus the 30 students who are currently here now. And these 30 students who are currently here now are going to go and replace the principals who are currently out there. If you went to Santa Rosa City Schools, every principal at those high schools and junior high schools is or was one of our students, either administrative services or master's credentials programs. That's the impact that we have. I currently have a proposal on my table from Ukiah and Lakeside, Lake County. They've gotten together. They have 30 students ready for us to come provide services to them. I have no capacity to be able to expand our program. And I think about the resources that we are putting towards the Candela students for just the Candela program for just a few students. And it quickly becomes clear to me that we need to look at our core mission and focus on our students here at Sonoma State. The second problem that we're encountering with the Candela program is the structural problem. We receive no FTES. This is a fee for service. So what happens at the very beginning of the program, an MOU was drafted, and we laid out how much money flowed from UC Davis to us to pay for the release time for faculty in our program. And during that time, during the course of the last 10 years, there's been some minor adjustments to that. But back during 2008 and 2009, there were some dramatic cuts. And we weren't really consulted in those cuts. We were told by UC Davis that this was going to be the new budget. We pushed back, but we're team players, so we stepped up and said, yes, we'll make adjustments. I had to fire some people from my school. They were able to get them to another position. But there were dramatic cuts. We went from about $250,000 to about $165,000. UC Davis proposed a fee for doctoral students that's used to support students. I think it was, I don't think that they're in any way trying to be mean about this fee, but they do charge a fee to the students, and that's used to support students. They have consolidated all the administration there, and we struggle constantly over the course of the 10 years on trying to make our value and presence known. If you go to the website, you will see that in the Candela homepage, you will see Sonoma State mentioned one time, and that one time is underneath the title of Vicky Montero.
as co-director, and Armand found that for us.
That's good at that.
So yeah. there's a structural problem here. I can't in any with any conscious go to the provost and say, please give me another hire for my educational leadership faculty. If Candel were to disappear, I can fill 2.6 loads with faculty. I really can't fill a third or a fourth. I have much greater needs within my school for the number of faculty. And if we were to hire another faculty person for educational leadership, what would happen if the Candel decided to do another cut? How would I fill that person's load? I couldn't fill that load if the money were to go away. The final point I want to make is about process. Process is huge in this. And we had to think really hard about this. And so I thought about where is the start point for all this? Because as soon as you raise the question about whether this should go towards discontinuance or not, everybody's automatically behind the ball, unless you were there at that initial decision, that initial point to consider this moving forward. So Vicki, Paul, and I, after the switch of the budget, we had many meetings. It took us months to reach this point. And I realized at Tomales, there's never been a Candel class held here in Sonoma State. Closest has been is Tomales. That at the Tomales classes, we had a meeting. And at that meeting, I realized that neither Vicki nor Paul were going to make a decision either way. Paul is not in favor of continuing, Vicki's not. So I took it upon myself to make the decision. And that's when I approached the president. I approached Harold Levine, the dean at the school at UC Davis. Then once that started, then I brought it forward to the rest of the faculty who teach within the Sonoma State part of the program. And then I took it to my school graduate committee, my school curriculum committee, EPC graduate committee, and EPC, and now here. I believe that I have followed the policy, but more importantly, I have followed the intent of the policy and have allowed opportunity for people to weigh in and give their information, their beliefs about the program.
Thank you. All right. So I know you have a large chunk of materials in front of you. So I guess the question is there any information that you can provide to allow us to ensure that the materials are ready? And please consider their readiness.
Part of the plan also is to include in the Senate packet that goes out a copy of the discontinuance policy so that people will have that. As well. We do have two hard copies here in case anybody needs to see it for part of this conversation.
Let me make a couple of comments. 40,000 this program was a result of a movement of collaboration between the CSU and the UC dating into the mid-1990s, etc. And to be honest, it began with a program with Fresno and UC Davis. At that time, the CSU did not have the authority to grant a limited number of doctorate programs, which eventually did, despite the opposition of the UC. When we began this, it really was a tripartite program between Sac State, Sonoma State, and UC Davis. When the CSU was granted the ability to do their own doctorate. Sac State pull out of the joint program and have begun their own program. At that time, there was the intention that eventually every campus would do his own doctoral program. The reality is that there's a number of campuses where you do not have the critical mass, either in the number of students or faculty, to do that. And we continue, despite Sac's departure, to do it with the UC Davis. And things went very, very, very well. Until the last 3 years or so, where UC Davis, under new leadership, has decided to truly beef up their graduate programs in significant and independent ways. And the rules of the game were changed unilaterally by UC Davis. And this is the result of that change of their rule. It points out to the fact that at one time there were a number of these joint programs, not just in education but in other areas, between the CSU and UC. And with the exception of the relationships that exist between UC San Diego and San Diego State, all the other programs have disappeared. Simply, to be honest, the UC is really not interested in playing on that field. They believe that it is their game and it should be done. But while I'm highly disappointed in the consideration of this discontinuance, to be honest, I'm not sure how much of it is of our own making and how much is of the making of the UC philosophy, again, with the exception of UC San Diego. And UC San Diego, San Francisco State had about 3 or 4 programs going with Berkeley, gone. And that has happened all throughout. Just to give you a little background of the higher elevation.
Okay, so I have a name and then
I don't think it was me.
I think it was Catherine.
Oh, Catherine? Okay. Maybe I should put my glasses on. So, Catherine.
It's a procedural issue. I'll wait.
Okay. Margie.
So, in terms of readiness and thinking about the size of the packet, mm-hmm. I can understand EPC's concern about all kinds of things, starting with will people actually even read any of this stuff. So I was wondering if there might be an efficient way to include, I assume that this document that you created, EPC's decision document, will go in.
Yes.
With the list of the documents at
yes.
the end.
Yes, and the policy will go
and
in.
And the policy, right. Mm. And I'm wondering if instead of trying to figure out what else to do with the materials in terms of readiness, that too.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if what we ought to do is an unusual reminder to the Senate membership on Tuesday of the week, maybe, to have them take a look at the material and let people know that the material is not going to be provided in its entirety in the packet, so that those folks who want to bring devices to read them on and things like that can have them. I mean, it just gives people a heads up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it would be unfortunate if this discussion got shaped by the absence of the forest of documents in the room. So.
Mm-hmm. Along those lines, we have already planned ahead to have the data projector available. So we will be able to put anything up as well if needed.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can I ask a follow up?
Yeah.
Where are the documents now on the Senate website? Are they going to be in Dropbox? They're on the website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank
yeah.
you.
that
because I can't read it on
the I think that there were some letters that came in the few hours prior to the public hearing, and I don't know that those made it up yet, Laurel. There are a couple of additional letters that were in the materials that were emailed out, but they're not all on the Senate website. There are a few things that are missing, but they could easily be put there.
Dropbox would be an alternative,
or Moodle.
It doesn't matter. But just as long as there's one electronic location, everybody can get to
them. I think that might go a long way.
So perhaps emailing them out, plus also putting them in an electronic location where people can be directed during the meeting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't email them out. I'd just say go to the electronic place.
Okay.
Well, getting to the next, this was feedback on the electronic agenda. Why don't we just fold it in now?
There were other people in the speaker system.
Yeah. So
I'm after.
Yeah.
Sam,
so Catherine, you had deferred yourself. Still.
Margie, I was going to ask about.
That's when. Okay. So Sam.
Oh, thank you. I have one question. I guess it's for Carlos, and then one question about the readiness. Can I do them in order? Okay. So I'm an at-large member of this committee, so I get contacted by faculty all over the university. But anyway, so I've been contacted and it's been expressed to me that some faculty feel that the discontinuous proposal should have come out of the Candel faculty themselves, and that they have an MOU that makes them a separate faculty structure apart from the School of Education. So I said I'd bring that up. So I'm bringing it up.
So I asked the educational leadership faculty an interesting question when we were coming up with, as we move forward to making a decision. I asked them, can anybody else at this university be in charge of this program? And they told me no. They both told me no. And with that, I began to realize that the control and the oversight and significant decisions needed to occur there. There are other people involved, and they were the next people after speaking to the president and to Harold Levine, who we presented to. And I know David wrote a letter, and I saw it in there. I followed the policy the way that it was laid out, and I believe I followed the intent of the policy. I know now that the new contract asks for adjunct lecturers to be able to weigh in on important decisions. Every department does that a little bit differently around campus. But I think we gave every opportunity to people to weigh in on this. And it's really the recommendation to the president and the president's decision. It's making this final or not.
Just to add also that the policy itself allows anyone to bring a discontinuance proposal forward. So I could propose to discontinue your department. Anyone can bring a proposal forward. And so
not exactly.
So in that sense, it wasn't procedurally inappropriate that the dean brought it forward. But in terms of the sentiment behind the idea, EPC did spend a lot of time talking about was sufficient faculty input gathered early enough in the process, and we believe that it was, although there are some places that we think that the policy itself could be clarified to perhaps have made it work a little bit better, so that Dean Ayala was following the policy and the procedures. It's a policy and procedures document, but that I think there are some ways that it could have been expanded to allow, for example, for notification of all of the schools, for example, that the proposal was coming forward and asking for input earlier from them. The proposal actually entirely bypasses academic affairs, according to the policy, and doesn't even ask for input from academic affairs. So I think that given that, we now have, you know, a useful set of a trial run to make some clarifications that I think will help in the future. But EPC did discuss that issue at length about whether sufficient input was gathered early enough in the process. And it's our discussion on that's related in the minutes.
Okay. Thank you. then I had
a second.
Yeah. So this is about readiness of.
Yes.
So is the EPC recommendation going to be part of the? I mean, this is going to.
Yes, this is going to Senate.
So and the second page, on the second page of the factors against discontinuance, the cons. The pros are all very specific, but the cons are they're very vague. And except for the fourth con, all three of them are just people are against it. That's all it says. Some people are against it. I mean, that's so vague as to be completely unhelpful to me.
Okay.
I mean, without saying why they're against it, why should I care? That I mean, I don't know. Just three bullet points of there were some people who were against it.
I don't know that I would. I think that the intent here was to recognize that, was to point out to Senate that these were the issues that were under discussion at EPC. And so these were issues that were raised and acknowledged as concerns that different members of EPC had. And, you know, we were trying to honor the fact that it was a split decision.
But it doesn't say anything about why they were against it. So to me, that's not a con at all. That's just a report that some people were against it.
Go ahead. How do you want to respond?
Just to help clarify, I think some of them and the public comments that were received are part of the package, so people can go and read those.
Mm-hmm.
We just wanted to alert people that there were public comments that came in from students and from faculty that were all against discontinuing, and there were none for, and that was weighing on some, at least, if not, you know, a number of EPC members' minds in trying to make a decision about this. Similarly, the issue that we were just talking about, sort of the question of whether faculty, particularly the faculty that teach in the Candel program, not in educational leadership, felt whether they felt they were included or not in the decision-making process was something that some people were concerned about more than others, or et cetera, but we wanted to make sure that those concerns were documented so that people didn't either just think, oh, yeah, it was a slightly, you know, lopsided vote, but everyone was really okay with this, that these are the things that people were worried about. And then, you know, lastly, just that within the two members of the educational leadership, that they themselves were split over whether to discontinue or not. So I think those are not just people are against it, but the fact that these issues have come up seemed like they were reasons for hesitation.
Just on the same issue, though.
Okay.
So it just seemed like it'd be useful if there was at least some mention of where we might be directed to find what these actual objections were, rather than just simply a list that this group had objections, this group had objections. I mean, I know it's all in there, in this 200-page document.
So, okay, so you want more, we could do that, more specific reference. Okay, sure.
I think what would be helpful, too, is in this document.
I wanted to address the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so go ahead, Kirsten, and then we'll go to
I actually had 2 points, one of which is a follow-up. Mm-hmm. So let me do the follow-up to this and then defer my real speakers thing until other follow-ups have done.
Okay.
I agree and disagree with some of the comments. I mean, I think making a reference to say, see the letters for specifics, but I also think that part of what you're saying is one of the factors against discontinuance is, did it follow, you know, or discontinuance at this time is, did it follow the right procedure?
Mm-hmm.
We do have people who do not think it should. It may be they weren't specific, right? But the very fact, and so if one can frame it a little bit to say, you know, we took into consideration the fact that there are some people, should that affect our decision, you know, we took into consideration that you know, all the people who we talked to in the external community, you know, may not have had specific reasons, but they weren't, you know. And so you're basically saying not so much that this is a con from the overall point of view, as these were things we took very seriously. And then where there are specific comments in the letters, referring to the letters, But, you know, on the other hand, we're also listing specific things for the positives and not necessarily giving all the details of every single thing that everybody said was a positive, too. So, you know, let's not bend over backwards to weigh in every single negative when we're not weighing in every single positive.
And as we were trying to develop this by committee, by email, to create this language, I think that was part of the struggle, was to come to consensus that we were comfortable with this document going forward. And so I think that's why some of the language is a little squishy in that sense. And also I think we were struggling with how much to go into significant detail, because then the detail itself, there's debate over the detail itself. And so part of this is, you know, just to try to highlight the issues that EPC noted of concern, so that then Senate members can also take those into account, and to not sort of assume that Senate is going to have exactly the same reading of the documents, because they might not.
Okay, so Elaine, then you want to come back to your thing.
Well, I was just saying that one thing that might be useful is to take that big document that was posted on the Senate website and have that have a linkable table of contents. So if somebody wants to go directly to the letters,
or even a link in here,
or even a link in that. That's right. So then that
to separate them
directly
out
in that 168-page document or whatever. And so I was able to see, you know, I could kind of see the little teeny tiny little thumbnails on my device just now, and I was able to kind of experiment and go. But that might be useful too. If someone directly wanted to see the arguments,
right,
the letters against, the letters for, you know, that could be a linkable table of contents.
And one thing that I think could probably help, too, is that there's one document that is the proposal document, including appended to it the comments of the various committees.
Right.
And so those could be separated out so that people could more easily go to grad studies comments, for example. And so I think we could set it up a little more cleanly. So I think we could definitely work on that.
Okay, so Kirsten and then Laura.
So the readiness question, which actually kind of followed up on some of the stuff that Margie was saying about reminding people, one of the things in terms of reminding them we might also want to do is to remind them that in a first reading, they're asking for clarification, therefore making sure that they have looked ahead or have what they need so that they know what clarification they want before, you know, would be really helpful. That this isn't so much a discussion of the discontinuance as clarification of the whatever.
Right. And they get 15 minutes to do it.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think reminding them, this is what a first reading is all about. We'll only have 15 minutes. It's all up here. I mean, even if it was in your packet, you wouldn't be able to look at it in 15 minutes.
So
that was the thing that I wanted to follow up with.
And along those same lines, I mean, the policy is very open-ended about what Senate can do. And so that if there's any information that you think needs to be gathered by any of the earlier levels, you can send it back. So it's a very open-ended policy, so I think that's a really nice way of framing it, is just letting people know that their job is to, at this point, see if there's anything else they need, because we would need time to assemble it.
I didn't see anywhere in here, is there a timeliness factor of this needing to be decided so that next year's allocations or whatever can handle?
Well,
We have an MOU in place for this year. There is no MOU in place for next year. We're waiting for decisions. And we have to also start thinking about if the discontinuance is accepted, how we're going to phase out over 4 years.
And also, because it's a business item, it doesn't carry over. So, you know, it would need to go all the way technically back down to the grad studies level.
EPC grad studies?
Yeah, because the Senate business doesn't carry over, and grad studies is a Senate subcommittee. It's an EPC subcommittee.
Okay. So, any more
questions and comments?
Laura. Oh, Laura, sorry.
No, just to echo on something that that Kirsten said, in the sense that I do think that perhaps we could reword the document a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much factors against discontinuance, the cons, but factors considered by EPC as to why perhaps discontinuance isn't appropriate at this time. Because I do think that some people were certainly expressing concern that, you know, have alternative avenues been explored? You know, are there, discontinuance is a pretty permanent decision to make. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're going to say, oh, you know, we didn't think of that thing, so let's bring it back. So I think it's that question of, have we really exhausted all options? And that's why the voices of people who are saying, hey, wait, it's not time to discontinue it yet, simply the fact that there are those voices is itself a con against making the decision. I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes sense to me, but then it was following up on my argument. So
I can definitely, you know, take this back, and we can revise the wording a little bit more to tighten it up, but I don't think that the arguments are going to change. And again, there's the timeliness factor.
Richard, and also we've been on this for a bit, yes. So we can come to a conclusion.
I propose moving this forward to the Senate.
Second.
Any discussion on that? Any contingencies on that?
Can I ask him, the proposer, a question?
Yeah, sure.
Do you mean after they've done some of the things that were suggested here, or just as it is?
I think the EPC is trying to make a clear case in this document, and I would approve them going ahead with making those clarities as they see fit. Yes.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Okay, so it's on the consent calendar, right? No.
Can I also
we'll check on the time.
You're getting funny. Can I also say, Carlos, thank you for the thoughtfulness with which you have presented this.
Okay. Okay, so let's see. So what I think I'd like to do now is jump to a business item, and then we'll come back to some of the reports. So we have the first item is the proposed constitutional change to the definition of faculty. This is also in that packet that Laurel sent around, some of the language there if you want to see it. But it's also a hard copy. So basically, in this thing that Laurel sent out was everything except what was on hard copy on the tables when we came in, because we these were added in afterwards. So, Richard, take it away.
Thank you. Okay. I don't think I can do as good of a job as Linda can, taking a lot of stuff and just getting down there. So I'm going to try, so bear with me. So in terms of the first page after the agenda page is a information that came from that's coming from FSAC. And basically what initiated this is that every year, both the Senate and then, of course, as part of that initiation of that information, FSAC gets a list of emeritus faculty who are going to be considered each year. And so FSAC then sort of said, well, geez, let's make sure the emeritus faculty policy, you know, what does it look like? And we looked at it. And in the preamble of that policy, there is a statement that the award is reserved for four classes of faculty listed or defined in Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. And so we said, well, geez, what are faculty? Because we're FSAC. So if you go to the Constitution, and there it's pulled out for you, Article 2, Section 1, the membership. And basically there are four classes of membership, 1.1 through 1.4, and then 1.5 basically says if you're on sabbatical leave or if you're on a DIF or if you're on an absence of leave without pay, you're still a member of the faculty. So that just defines that. So with reviewing this, we see that in section 1.3 that there is a inclusion of what are called student service professionals, two or above, in our Constitution. And when you look at that, it really is not a clear indication of what faculty are when you look at other documents that define faculty. So for the first part is that you go to the collective bargaining agreement, and in the collective bargaining agreement, Article 2 is a clear definition of what faculty are, and it's a long, long definition. But basically, it comes down to it's Unit 3. All Unit 3 people are considered faculty. Next page. And then if you further go to the back of the collective bargaining agreement, it has an appendix, and in that appendix, it actually goes to class codes. Class codes, and what are class codes? That is basically a base of what the university, CSU, looks at as how you define individuals within the CSU HR system. And again, you list all the individual class codes, and none of those includes student service professionals. Mm-hmm. So the contract is very clear of who faculty are. It's Unit 3 people and nobody else. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then you go to the California State University Classification and Qualification Standards to look up, okay, what are student service professionals? And you come up with two categories of these. There are ones which are within the Unit 3, faculty that are student service professionals, academic related. And those class codes are listed in the back of the appendix in the contract. And then, however, there's also a separate set which are within Unit 4, a totally different group of individuals within the CSU, which are student service professional series. And those class codes that are listed in there are not at all listed within the collective bargaining agreement. And if anybody would like to see, I've just got two copies of those classification standards, one for each of the different types. But I gave you the links, so you go there and take a look at the things themselves. So then everyone says, well, geez, what do other people do? What do other CSUs do? So what I've done is, if you look on the third page of this, there's a little table, faculty membership in CSUs. And by going to their constitutions, their bylaws, their faculty handbooks, whatever information was available on their websites, try to define how do they define faculty in their individual campuses. And when you do so, there's a little bit of interpretation in some of these. And in many of them, only 14 basically can you interpret what they're defining faculty as. The others, it's either vague or they just don't define it. Okay. And so if you look, however, we find that within that variation, four of the campuses that will include SSPs in their definition of faculty, Cal Poly Pomona Sac State, San Francisco State, and Cal Poly SLO. And two of those campuses restrict the SSP class to three or four, and two others, Sacramento and San Francisco, include all classes of SSPs. And then nine of the campuses either include or restrict SSPs to the academic-related class only, not SSPs, as we define in our campus. And so we say, okay, so is there a problem here at SSU? So what? So at SSU, last year I had Laurel do an analysis for me, and she pulled up the data. I didn't want her to go ahead and do it again because she's very busy on other things. There are approximately, and that number, I don't know why it's 68, but it should be 61 student service professionals, two or above, on our campus.
What are we looking at now?
There's the second page of this.
We're on the second page. Part. Yeah. Roman numeral 4.
Just having fun with the
Roman numeral 4. Okay. And they, of course, serve throughout the campus. And if you look at where they're serving, where more of them are sitting than in other places, it's in academic advising, financial aid, Res Life programs, student admission, student records, recruitment, and university support services, all across the campuses. Doing things that, of course, are very critical for student success within our campus, but are really not related directly to academic-related issues. And then what I do is I just pull out there from the student service professionals series in the classification code, there's this little blurb about really how it defines what student service professionals do in the most general of the senses. And if you read through that, my last little sentence there after the on the next page, that these positions, though critical to student services at SSU, are focused more on administrative and or professional activities than they are on academics. Okay. So given this background, FSAC realized, well, what we think we're dealing with in terms of who do we as faculty define as members of the faculty, we think it's time to re-examine this. So, and if we're going to do so, we recommend that the Senate has to revise the Constitution, and it would do so in the Section 1 membership, subsection 1.3. It's very simple. 1.3 would just be modified to saying that those individuals who hold written appointments at the rank of student service professionals, academic-related, period. And just that would therefore exclude the student service professionals that are not academic related. Right. So we gave a quick little rationale there in terms of that we would be meeting the requirements that are put forward by the CSU standards. We'd be meeting the requirements as put forward in the faculty collective bargaining agreement. And we're recognizing that that faculty are engaged in complex duties that require advanced training, typically gained through a terminal degree, such as a doctorate in the field in which that individual is working. If this were to come through, what would be the outcome? Well, one of the outcomes of this is that we know that people would say, well, geez, we have student service professionals, our valued colleagues. Why would you want to throw them out of the Senate? And the response is that does not exclude them from the Senate. It just excludes them as being defined as faculty. Okay? And so, therefore, what we would also need to do is to change Article 3 within the Constitution, which is the organization and powers of the Academic Senate of Sonoma State University. Under there, subsection 1.2 talks about the representative members, and it says senators are chosen from each of the schools, the university library, and student service professionals. We would just strike out student service professionals and leave it going to there. Of course, later on, if we're going to talk about reorganization, we may have to change further language in there, but that's beyond this one. Within that section, there are many other sections, though, which are who are members of the Senate. This just talks about the representative members. There's a listing for officers, at-large members, the ex officio senators, administrators, student staff, CFAs, and emeritus faculty. So we would have to add a new subsection, 1.10, student service professionals, and then the language in there would have to be determined by that structure and functions if this were to be adopted. Right. And then third, and then finally, the emeritus faculty policy. Again, we also understand that there are some student service professionals who have worked as lecturers over time. And so we would not want to exclude them from the emeritus policy. And so the idea would be the emeritus policy could also be modified to have an additional criterion that those individuals who have taught as a lecturers for some number of years, and we said at least 5 years, would be considered eligible for emeritus status. And this would be anybody on the campus, not only student service professionals, but we also have staff members who sometimes serve as lecturers as well. So we'd be extending that to people who are basically doing academically related material work as potential emeritus faculty.
Thank you.
Okay.
So we're talking about this being about readiness, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm not clear on is why. And I'm not saying there isn't a why. I'm not clear on why we need to change the definition, what the impact is, what it's saying, and I think that particularly when you're talking about excluding people who perhaps felt that they were part of this group in the past, that it's really important to frame the why in such a way that it makes it clear, well, I don't know, you know, makes it clear, because otherwise I'm like, are we just being picky about, and I don't mean picky in a bad way, I'm frequently picky and think that that's not, you know, are we just trying to be particularly clear on what the roles are? What's the purpose? And so I don't actually need you to respond to that and to tell me what it is, but I think that framing is going to be important in bringing it up, so that people realize why it has an impact and how it's valuing all of the members rather than just being there in a particular classification.
So, Julie.
Mine's a very specific question. I know you included links, but I'm wondering, and you don't have to answer this either now, but if you could explain what's the difference between student services professional academic related versus student services professional anything else, how academic related versus all other types of SSPs differ.
How do you decide?
Yeah, what's
like distinguishing fact characteristic?
So you want us to make that
a little bit more clear. So pulling us out of these documents.
Maybe just adding a little something in the, this document to make that clear.
Okay.
So, Laurel?
I'd like to provide some historical background for you. SSPs show up in the very earliest constitution of the Senate, so that you know that. I believe my understanding is that at the time of the first constitution, the people who were in that category were a very small group on campus. So they've been in there since the beginning. But when did that happen? I've been here so long, I can't remember. Quite a while ago, the SSP classification was expanded to cover more people in more types of work. So that's what, to Richard's point of, they're not teaching classes where some, a lot of the SSPs were teaching classes or doing that kind of work. You know, there's SSPs in financial aid. I remember when all the admissions people got turned into SSPs. So the classification has changed since they were put in the Constitution, so you want you to know that too. Academic related means they go through RTP. That's what it means. Yeah. And in the way the bylaws of the Constitution are written now, only academic related SSPs can vote on the RTP. So when I do the election, that's why I have to split everybody out. Only the people that are under RTP get to vote on RTP committee. So I just thought maybe that might be helpful.
Okay, so Sam?
I want to follow up on what Kirsten said. I think people are going to ask why. And when I read this, the only why I see is that we want to make and match the CBA. But then your table shows that that's not a concern of virtually every campus in the CSU, so why should it be a concern of ours? I mean, they clearly, it's all over the place, and a lot of them don't include coaches, even though that's clearly in the CBA. And the reading the table makes it sound like it's up to every campus to decide how they're going to define faculty, which is what we're doing with this document. So I think why is going to be a big deal. I mean, is there a requirement that we match the CBA, or just we just like to because we like to match?
Well, can I just respond in general to this why thing? I mean, there are real why reasons, and I'll hold back on them. But, and we talked about this at FSAC. Should we bring forward all these other reasons? And my point, they bowed to my pressure, and I'll give that to them. We are faculty standards and affairs. The first thing, who are we? I don't know. Well, shouldn't we know who we are? I think that's more critical than any of these other questions. Do we even know who we are? And if we just say, well, whatever we want, well, that's okay. I would like us to say, no, here's who we are, versus, well, whatever is kind of left over, whatever everyone else says doesn't matter. I'm more of, no, we are this. Because once you know who you are, you have power and strength. And that's how I saw it. But yeah, I agree that, you know, we should, probably should put down some other reasons which I can bring forward to the Senate.
I wanted to follow up.
Well, actually, I want to get through to here. I'm watching the clock here. So, Sam, we got you. So, Catherine and Elaine?
Yes, two things. One, it says it does not exclude student service professionals from being members of the Senate. Do we currently have a seat for a student service professionals?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just
yeah.
One?
Three.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and then secondly, can you just give us a taste of what some of the other reasons are? I mean,
One of the quickest ones would be all of these student service professionals, all of them, are all going to be eligible to be emeritus faculty. They will all have the rights and responsibilities all the rights of the emeritus faculty.
Okay, and why is that a problem?
That's money.
Okay.
If we're looking at the Senate reorganization, one of the parts of the Senate reorganization that we hear that's going to be driving this to come us up later is, again, who we are as faculty and therefore who we are as a governance. I think it's critical that this ties in with that, because we have to have this conversation among ourselves, because if we don't, we can drift into various areas which, you know, can get us into trouble. It hasn't yet, but I think there's nothing wrong with knowing who we are.
So it also feeds a little bit into the faculty reorganization to some degree.
Is there a particular area of the reorganization that your sparks concern? Or?
From some of the conversations we're hearing among the various places that we've had our conversations with already, we keep getting back, as you do this reorganization, don't forget what we do as faculty. Don't forget who we are as faculty. And that's, we hear that, and we hear that very critically. And so we're being told by our faculty, don't forget who we are as faculty. So I think our majority of the people who we call faculty feel strongly about this, and we want to, and I think this helps support that to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I was just going to say, in discussions in FSAC when I was there, it helped me to understand these different levels of SSPs. I really hadn't considered it. I had thought that SSPs meant people who taught or somehow, you know, taught the leadership courses or were part of the advising of students that were really integral, you know, talked to students all the time and helped teach students in all the ways in the kind of the broader sense that we think of teaching. And so I was surprised to find that SSP2s, many of the SSP2s had nothing to do with, you know, actually like teaching students anything. And so when I think about the word faculty, I think I understand where we're just coming from, defining what that means to be faculty and teaching students. So it was helpful to me to understand actually who the SSP academic related faculty were, but I don't know that we need to, you know, name names right now, but I think there were only three.
Oh,
there's
one, two.
Well, there's one is like on a sabbatical. And then there's one more.
Okay.
Two, as far as I know.
Two, yeah. So that's not very many people that go through the RTP process. But we also at FSAC, was very important to us not to exclude people who felt they were part of the faculty. So it also helped me to understand which of these SSPs might think that they were part of the faculty and not to exclude those people. And I think that's what this, on the recommendations to the Academic Senate, the very bottom, that just mentions, say, the emeritus faculty policy could be modified to include people who do consider themselves to be faculty because they are actually taking courses. And so to maybe change some wording there.
Do we need a motion?
We could entertain it. It's always an appropriate thing.
But I didn't know if we needed one or if by not having one, it automatically makes it ready. I think all the things that you were saying and that others, I think that's important. And so to some extent, that's the framing. The framing is that when you go around and you talk to about the Senate reorganization, people say, you know, don't lose track of who we are. So then it comes back to the question of who are we? But I also think that saying, honoring what each group of people is doing and what their roles are on campus is important, so that what you're saying is, we're not so much excluding these people as we're saying we're honoring this role and then we're honoring them separately in their role because they have an important role and it's different from ours. And, you know, so that some kind of framing that explains that, I think, would be very valuable to help people say, yeah, you know, it does matter to me that I'm faculty and what faculty do. And, yeah, you know, these people do something, and I didn't realize that it was so completely different. And now I know, and now I can honor that contribution as well. I don't know. I think that that's important, and I think it's valuable. I don't have any. I'm not objecting to it.
Any other questions, comments, concerns? So I had one point, though, is we have in here language to be determined in the recommendation from the Academic Senate. And I'm a little confused how we would have a motion in front of the Senate to do something with language to be determined, unless we're somehow or other saying something specifically like, what is that? You know, and who's going to do it and when? I mean, are we trying to recommend that we have a constitutional amendment to do this, in which case I think we need our language, or we have to say, or are you asking for FSAC to be charged with developing a constitutional amendment referendum?
If you would like my input on that, we are making a recommendation to the Senate. The Senate would have to figure out how to carry out that recommendation.
If I were king in the Senate, I would indicate that that would be the charge of structure and functions.
Passing the buck, are we?
Okay. I like that. Right.
So then, I mean, would it make sense for this to be changed to language to be determined by structure and functions?
Okay, that's good.
Right, so that people know what they're voting on.
Yeah.
Instead of there's an absence there.
Good.
Okay. Senate?
Well, then, would the Senate still have to approve that language?
Of course.
Yeah, we'll have to come back. Right.
Just a point of clarification. The recommendation to the Senate is to change the subsection 1.3. An outcome could be this other change, but the actual thing the Senate would be approving is just that one thing, right?
Right. It doesn't necessitate.
Okay. I win.
Okay, so the recommendation is actually just this part here.
Right.
So maybe we need to have that clearer, that the recommendation doesn't mean that all those outcomes happen, but you're giving us a heads up that that might follow.
Good point.
Okay.
Yep.
So if we could just box that out a bit so that that's clear. Okay, so did I hear an incipient motion?
So moved.
Okay, second. Any discussion? Catherine?
Yeah, I don't know whether this is efficiency or whether this is balance, but I don't think this should go forward without that language in for a subsection 1.10, because I can't imagine having two elections, two constitutional amendments elections separately. These are getting to the required level of turnout is very, very difficult, and there is a direct consequence of this change to the way we do things now that we may or may not want, the Senate may or may not want to deal or alter. I mean, we may just say, okay, let's just, you know, define faculty this way. Let's have an election to define student services professionals, academic related, period, and not want to go ahead with this, the further change. But I think we should have that ready. I really do. I just, to me, this is just completely out of whack without it. It's only one piece of a two-piece puzzle, since the outcomes have been identified. So it's how to deal with the people that we are now going to be excluding. And I think if we're going to do that, we should do it in the same election, or decide not to do it. But the language should be there to go forward.
Yeah, I just want to say I completely agree. I think these elections are changing the Constitution is hard, and we should do it all at once and do it. And if we do have to do something about the SSP representation on the Senate if we're going to make the first change. And so to not do them both at the same time, I think that would be a mistake.
Any further comments on that? Marty?
All right, let's just, what if we actually rolled this discussion and these decisions into the process of the faculty governance restructuring, because it seems to me that in much the same way that figuring out who the faculty are is critical to things like who then is eligible for emeritus status and the nature of their service on the Senate, it's kind of a critical component to understanding the definition of faculty governance too. So could it be that in some ways FSAC has gotten a little ahead of the rest of that process? It seems like every time we turn around in the discussion of this, we are bumping into, and then this may change again when we change the faculty governance structure. So I'm wondering what would happen if this body decided to say, this is a really important and excellent idea, FSAC. Can you yoke it to the rest of the faculty governance restructuring? In effect, defining who constitutes faculty has to be a first step, I would suggest, in actually going forward with the faculty governance restructuring. Faculty structure regoverning. That might be even better. Let's restructure our governing or regovern our structuring or something.
I'm just tossing this out there, and I don't mean to derail what's now been half an hour of discussion on this topic, but perhaps we're a little bit ahead of the cart's a bit ahead of the horse here.
Yes. Okay. FSAC is just bringing forward to this body our recommendation. How this body would like to go forward, and I've heard some really good ideas, is up to this body. We don't feel hurt if you feel, well, you know, good job, but wait, we're okay. At this point, we feel we've done our due diligence, and we're bringing our recommendation. We're at this point done with doing our due diligence. It's now up to the larger Senate body to figure out how to go forward. I don't think FSAC can dictate that. We should not.
Well, then, for the record, I'd like to withdraw my motion that we send this forward to the Senate.
Do you want to draw your second?
Happy to follow.
We just have to vote it down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sam, did you have any further on the discussion before that vote?
No.
Okay. So anyone else have discussion on whether we vote to move this to the Senate agenda or against? Yeah.
Well, could this body move to send it to Structure and Functions instead of
the
Senate?
Yeah. The second
when
motion
we vote this
vote
down,
down,
yeah.
Do that exact
possibility. And to the task force.
Okay. So... all those in favor of moving this to the Senate agenda for next week, say aye. All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Okay, so did I hear another recipient motion?
I can't move, so.
Oh, sorry.
She's been
paralyzed.
No. Yes.
I move that we, I'm trying to figure out how I can do this. To leave flexibility up, I move that we send this recommendation to Structure and Functions, and do we also want to move that it go to the task force or just to Structure and Functions? Structures and Functions.
Mm-hmm. And second that one.
Okay.
Just Structures and Functions.
Any discussion on that?
They can then figure out the rest.
So,
could we include in that a recommendation along Margie's lines that this be folded into the restructuring of reorganization.
If that's enough, please, that's the best thing.
Point of clarification, the reorganization is running out through Structure and Functions.
Right.
They already have oversight of that anyway. So
right.
It's part of what you're doing.
All right. Any more discussion on that motion? So all those in favor of sending this to Structure and Functions as part of their stop. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
I think the
bottom
of the table
is
falling asleep.
So I'm going to, Richard, do you have any objections to us holding back on business item two and going straight to business item about the reorg? I'm assuming that that's of higher priority than. And that we will get to that. Okay, because I did actually want to have a report from Andrew Pickens to do that numbers issue. I was hoping that Larry could give us some of that. So I wanted to get a chance to get to him as soon as possible. Okay, so business item six, the reorganization task force coming out of Structure and Functions. The purpose here, again, is to make sure that this is ready for the Senate. And what we're trying to bring forward is not the proposal itself, but a report on the process, where we are in the process, and trying to elicit some input from the Senate before the final proposal would come forward at the next Senate meeting, so then we would have a chance for two hearings and a decision on a proposal before the end of the year. So what you'll see here is the packet. This is this part here that wasn't in the original packet. It's in front of you. One of the things that we'll probably end up doing is, despite the speaking of screening, since this is coming out of Structure and Functions, we'll probably put in the top. But we have been, some of you have seen earlier versions, try to see the one that's in front of you rather than the one that you remember from before. And the idea here is, are we bringing enough to the Senate so that it makes sense, so people see what the process is, they see who we've consulted, they see the themes that are coming out, and what kind of input would be welcome.
So I'm going to make the same kind of comment, it seems to be my refrain, which is, since what you're bringing forward is a reporting of the process and where we stand, it seems to me that whatever packet the Senate gets and the way you first frame it, that should be really clear. Because otherwise, the first thing we look at is, why are we doing this? And it's really all about the restructuring. And so I think you might want to have a front page or a front thing that says to people, this is a two-parter. We're now going to tell you about the process that we're using, and then we're going to be coming back to you for, you know, with the proposal or all of that, so that they don't just immediately assume that what we're doing is discussing about this, because this isn't in effect the proposal, because that's the way I would take it if I were.
So in a sense, saying before the why are we doing this, and that should be changed to instruction, we should have a slide in front of it saying, what are we doing today? We're talking today. About process,
reporting
what we found, and getting some input, and then why are we considering a restructuring?
Yeah, that would be my suggestion.
So Laura was next, and then Melinda.
My lack of clarity still is on the slide that has the details of the curriculum committee's idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got the new standing committee with curriculum and academic planning, and then EPC reporting to it, as well as university standards. And it's not at all clear to me from this how that new standing committee is different from APC, except that EPC is now reporting to it. And so that's, I think, I there's undoubtedly some fine, or not even so fine, some detail of APC, which I've never been super clear on anyway. That I don't know, but I think having something maybe on a separate slide or something comparing those two would be really useful, because to me this just looks like you've rearranged the chairs. I don't see any difference in the chairs.
So, Richard, any thoughts?
Well, I thought that Laurel did a nice job with this sort of overview.
Right, but I understand that, but knowing that there used to be an APC that there isn't anymore, but this sounds a lot, the new standing committee sounds a lot to me like what APC used to be. And I'm fully open to the idea that it isn't, but it's not clear to me how it's different. And so if you can make those different, you know, the comparison between the two clearer, I think that would help. Especially for someone who's looking at this relatively quickly, probably in the Senate.
So you would want to know what the overall charge of a committee like ABC had been, that's on hiatus, and why
right.
This is not that same committee. Okay.
Yeah, one of the challenges that we have here, and we understand that EPC has been really busy, but from the other places, we've gotten more feedback of, could you do this, could you do that, could you not do this, could you not do that?
Mm-hmm.
But we're working in a vacuum on that part. And so maybe if that can even be expected to be part of our conversation while we're at Senate,
mm-hmm.
right, is actually to get us clearer so that the following Senate session, we actually can come forward with something specific. This is the one place where we don't sit on it, and we've come and we've asked, and you've been so busy with discontinuances and things like that that we understand, but at least maybe during this discussion here, some of that could get fleshed out, and maybe the committees could be primed to help us.
But I'm not asking about the specific duties of one versus the other, in the sense that I just, the version of EPC and the current and the one for discussion look very similar to me. And the new standing committee looks very similar to me to the existing, although on hiatus, APC. So to me, I'm sort of thinking, well, gosh, if you organize this, then we're going to have the new standing committee that's on hiatus that we can't get enough people to serve on. And why is EPC, as the incoming chair of EPC, I'm a little overly concerned about this, perhaps. Why am I reporting to a committee that might not actually be there?
I'm confused. In that, I'm confused about what we want to do with Senate. Are we talking about the process? Or are we presenting preliminary ideas and asking for feedback? Because if we're talking about the process, there's very little in here that indicates what the process was other than consultation so far. And I was kind of expecting to see something like, you know, this is what we did, you know, here's where we went, here's who we still need to talk with. This is the, you had all of those meetings, like the lunch meeting and the forum and all of this. And therefore, you know, where we are now is we've got all of that. Whereas the document that we're being presented is more, this is the current state of what we're thinking, give us feedback. And I guess I don't necessarily care which one we do. But they are two different things. Mm-hmm. And so my initial statement was under the assumption we were going to do the former. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the latter, it sort of speaks more to what Laura was saying. In some ways, if we don't want it to be that conversation, we shouldn't have this in there. You know, and so to me, that's the readiness issue, is really deciding what it is we're wanting to do with Senate on this.
Talking about our method, or are we talking about our results?
Yeah, method or results. And okay. If you want to talk about preliminary results and have a discussion, we've just had 15 minutes free up on our agenda. We could have a good discussion.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think that we need to decide what we're asking for.
Thank you. I actually, the first thing I wanted to say is to support what Kirsten's saying, that I think it's unclear what the purpose of bringing this forward is now, especially the way that it was set up as this is a report and then the real proposal is coming the week after that. I think that, but then it was also said, but we'll take suggestions here with this. And so I think it's blending together too much the different stages of the process. And so we have to figure out, as Kirsten explained, what the purpose is. And I'm not sure that the four discussion is something that really is at the level of being ready for Senate discussion, because I think it's still too under discussion in various other contexts. And I think that's what we get to with the point that you just raised about the fact that EPC hasn't provided formal input, because when you and Richard came to EPC, we had a lengthy discussion, and we did at that point say, yes, it would be great for EPC to provide an alternate version of what this would look like, but we haven't done that due to busyness. And so I kind of, you know, I was curious, you know, to receive this today, you know, earlier today, and to say, oh gosh, okay, so we're at the same point, because EPC unfortunately hasn't provided input. So I know that EPC is slowing down the process, but what you're doing is you're, you know, if it goes forward, you know, for report and discussion, what's going to happen is that EPC is then going to have to get it together and put forward our alternate proposal. But I don't know if you want that happening on the floor of Senate with EPC saying, well, actually, we have a really different opinion of what this should look like, and giving you an alternate structure, because that's what would happen, as you know from your attendance at our meeting. So.
Anybody else on speakers list, Richard?
Yeah. As an idea, so if you look at the reorganization facts, I think what I'm hearing is people want to hear more about things that have been going on and thoughts and ideas. Now, not everything that's in those facts may be what we're talking about, but I think like we can add a section there about, you know, why is the new, what are we thinking about? What are the major changes? And the major change would be really two things, such as the organization of curricular side of faculty governance. What are some of those proposed changes? Well, we would have these two sort of different committees. One was used to be thought of as APC, now calling it this curriculum oversight committee. What is it doing now that it hadn't been doing before? What would change in EPC? How would that change? So maybe actually writing those out in the facts themselves and bringing the facts forward as a report and cleaning up some of these other ones, would that be what are people asking for? Is that what I'm hearing?
Can I respond? Yeah. I think the first question is, what do you, the task force, want? In other words, are you trying to get feedback? Or are you trying to let people know where we are in the process, who we've talked with, who we're waiting on, sorry, and that it will be coming? Well, I don't think you can do both and in that, in one. My personal feeling is that if you do both and, it'll get too messy. And we have a very full agenda. And, you know, in many ways, you've given people lots of opportunity to come and talk and give input. I think telling people where the process is, what you're expecting, and then reminding them, you know, before we bring something to the Senate to discuss, if you'd like to be part of that, come talk to us or suggest who else we should go see or whatever. I don't know. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn. Well, actually, no, but speaking inappropriately. But I think that that's the basic thing. Before we can really decide what should happen, you have to clarify the purpose.
Julie?
So I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I also wonder then how substantially different doing that limited piece is from what we've already done. Because hasn't this already come to the Senate?
No.
Wasn't there a suggested proposal?
It surfaced as part of another discussion, and that's what partly why we said, oh, we've got to bring it to Senate, because people are getting anxious and wanting to get their input.
Was there some sort of paperwork that had a layout of proposed changes, and I'm misremembering entirely?
It went to other places.
Okay, maybe I'm misremembering.
You'd come to your committee.
Yes.
That was your private viewing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, my opinion is that why we want to bring it to the Senate is we want to start a discussion. This whole process is to start a discussion about what we're doing and asking questions about governance. Should we be thinking about national trends? Should we be thinking about how we do things? I mean, it's a discussion. And all the places that we've gone so far in consultation, they've been great discussions. And I think bringing it to the Senate is trying to get it to a wider audience to say, let's have this discussion. And people have a hard time having a discussion if you don't give them something to talk about, right? So this is something to talk about. And if people want to change the discussion or change what we're talking about, we want to hear that too.
Yeah, don't we have a category on our agenda called discussion items? I always certainly could, right? And so I guess I would move that this comes as a discussion item, not as a business item.
That'll help with the framing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we think of some of these materials as trying to provide the context for the discussion rather than actually being proposing it, because that's actually part of our point is, we're trying to say when we're trying to bring forward the various structures or whatever that we might have, what purposes, what are going to be the functions that we're trying to have happen, and therefore what structures would follow. And so, as Laurel was saying, so many people don't actually have a sense of how we operate. So part of what we're having to do, even for the people in faculty governance, is remind them of what our current structure is. Remind them of where we're having troubles, because that's part of what we're addressing. That's partly how we knew that we had to deal with it, was that we started seeing some dysfunctionality in various places, some of it being the vacancies, but not just that. And then, given what we are now versus what we were 30 years ago when some of these standards were set in the Constitution, how do we come forward with something newer that would possibly get dealt with this year. So
that was actually a formal motion, Richard.
And I did second it.
Okay. Any discussion on that?
That it go forward.
Or as a discussion.
As a discussion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Captain.
I'm going to vote against the motion. I think you folks have done a marvelous job of shopping this around and getting feedback and getting input and all of that stuff from so many different places that it seems to me to be much more, to me it would be much more straightforward to say, this is where we are, this is where we've been, this is where we are, these are the problems, this is the way, after considered and incredibly in-depth and long-term consultation, we think we should go. Have the proposal there, and then have a conversation about that proposal. I think this is this step is unnecessary given the extent of the consultation you've already gone through. You've talked to the committees. I would want to know what EPC wants to do. That would be the one piece that's missing. And without that, I would not even want this to go forward. But I think that I think it's been done. I think you've done what you want to do, and I think you should finalize the proposal, and I think you should get it out there. And I appreciate the desire for more consultation, but even from a 20-plus year advocate of more consultation, there comes a point when more consultation just becomes more energy. And I think we're at the point where at least from what I've seen, it needs to be clarified and come as a formal proposal. We can still have the conversation in reaction to a formal proposal. I mean, again, my experience with the Senate is give them a formal proposal, get the feedback, and if you need to change it, you need to have another conversation, but start, just go for it. You've done it. Go for it.
I have an idea. EPC, current and future, can you come up with a response to what you see in this packet by not next Thursday, but the following Senate meeting, which I believe is the 30th. Well, following executive committee meeting.
So that we can get it on.
So we can get it on.
The 23rd is the following executive committee.
What I'm going for is if we follow Catherine's advice and we want to bring this thing forward as a proposal, then it has to have EPCs in it. It has to.
Right.
So can you make it so that the task force can get EPC's input by the next executive committee so that we could take it as a proposal to the Senate meeting of the 30th?
If not, we're waiting until next year.
That's it. Basically, it means it putting it off for a year.
Right. Well, that's tough because, you know, we have another discontinuance hearing that's coming up next week. And so we also have two other business items we have four business items on the agenda, including so it can't happen during the meeting.
Right.
And
we're
so that's
dealing with the
so we already have to rewrite that. Then we're going to have to do the same thing for nursing, because to get nursing done this year, it's got to have the first reading waived. That's not true. It's not under the first reading. But basically, it has to come forward. The nursing proposal has to come to you next time anyway, along with probably a certificate proposal. Basically, and then at the meeting after that, we have four more business items coming forward.
Okay, so it sounds to me like...
So we can... I mean, I can do it, but it's going to mean bumping some of these other people until next year.
It sounds to me like...
Or bumping this till next year, and so it's a matter of priorities. And I can bump some of these other people curricularly, you know, to prioritize this, but that's what would have to happen.
So what would happen, task force members who are in the room, if it did roll to next year, this discussion?
I see Lynn's trying to get some.
I'm thinking, realistically, it's going to next year, even if EPC did bump people or heroically switch things. I'm looking at the number of Senate meetings. I'm thinking it's going to next year anyway. I mean, this is a huge change to consider.
Yes, we were thinking implementation certainly after this. That's not even
not next
part
year.
Of it yet. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if this had passed this year, then implementation would be next year. But if this goes forward, then, I don't know if implementation could happen next year.
We've got to vote to change the Constitution.
The other Constitution. Faculty.
This is
a bunch of things happening.
So we'll take a year to...
Yeah. Linda, Kristen, was there another hand? I
took mine back.
Okay. That's the one I was looking for. Couldn't find it anymore. Okay. So... Melinda.
So along those lines, I mean, maybe there's a way, I mean, if part of this is to get discussion and feedback, or I'm thinking, is there a way to bring part of it forward that doesn't seem to be as controversial, perhaps the restructuring of Senate itself rather than the committee structure and splitting it up a little bit? Because this is a whole heck of a lot to bring forward at the same time and to have fruitful discussion on.
Yeah, because I think that that might make sense is to do the first the Senate and then the subcommittees. I mean, then the committees.
And that's
that could come forward as a proposal. We certainly could do that. Those details we have much more ironed out, and we haven't heard as much blowback.
But the chairs of the subcommittees on the Senate, if you don't know what the subcommittees are.
Yeah, but the formula is standing committees have senators on it. Yeah, so it's 50.
I have no idea what we're doing anymore. And I understand that and all of that, but if we don't try to go forward with the Senate stuff now, it could fall back on a presentation that's merely, this is the process, this is where we are, we're waiting to get important feedback back from EPC, they have critical things, you know, we want you to know that we're moving along, but this is the status and likely it will go into next year because we're not going to rush something that is going to be so important to all of us. So that could put it back on as something that you would want to at least indicate the process and why it is that it's going to continue on to next year, so that people don't think that you're just like ignoring everything. But I'm not sure anymore whether that comment actually makes sense.
Well, we had a motion on the table to bring it forward as a discussion item. Do we at least want to finish that decision? And then we might have a little bit more after. So all those in favor of it coming forward next Senate as a discussion item, say aye in this form. Say aye. All those opposed, say
nay.
Nay.
Okay.
We seem to get a lot of stuff when we vote down.
The next thing I'm wondering, though, is could we, and I'm looking to Laurel and Richard here, does it make sense that because it's so big, I'm worried about we're going to have the same big hairball cacking again. So do we divide this and say, does the executive committee sound okay with, could we come forward with the Senate reorganization, leaving the committee stuff later, explaining that's where we're going, present that and the subset of this next week with the idea that the proposal will come forward for the Senate part of the stuff the following two, so we could at least possibly act on that this year. Julie?
I like that idea. Can we also include at least an update on what's happening?
Yes,
to be transparent about why we're doing this, what's going on.
Yes, okay. So
moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
Everything I move or second gets voted down.
Is that? All right, then that's what we'll do, and we'll revise this, and I'll definitely run, we'll make sure that we've run the revised packet around to everybody there. We're about to do the agenda, which will be this replacement, and I'm not the one in your packet. But before that, if those who haven't been able to make reports are able to send those to XCOM by email, that would be appreciated. However, I did think that it would be useful if we heard from Larry, maybe supported by Andrew, about some of the PBAC stuff this morning, because a lot of faculty have constantly been asking about what's the status of where the funding's coming from for the inversion compression stuff. And so some of that stuff was talked about at PBAC. That's coming out. So Larry, would you be able to?
I don't think I can do it in 3 minutes, so I would propose I do it at the full Senate.
Okay.
Other people will want to know there, so I'll just repeat myself.
A suggestion that we had earlier today was maybe if you could just encapsulate those things as a handout that we could include just the numbers, and so it might be that much easier.
Your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, those five areas.
Here's where it's coming from. Here's the rough numbers.
Yeah.
It's going to be a packed agenda next time, and
we
don't want it to get lost in the shuffle.
I'll do my best.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we'll be happy to work with you on trying to get work. Okay. All right. So. How about we go to our very late time certain of the agenda itself? So on here you'll see that among the things that we're doing next week is Stevens, the faculty trustee, will be here, and he's coming in at 4 o'clock after having been at other places on campus earlier in the afternoon. And so we were going to start with the Candel discontinuance at 3:15, a time certain of 3:30 for the sustainability folks coming to see that up on the special reports. Then at 3:45 we would move to...
We don't need that anymore.
Oh, that's out. Okay, good. A little bit easier.
Breathing room.
Yeah. So then we would move to... 4 o'clock, mm-hmm. So I guess maybe we'll have room for reports in there. And then for 4:30, Scott Horstein will be coming to give an update on the classroom upgrades. And then, I think we should move the report issue on the governance restructuring into where the proposed constitutional change. Does that make sense? Is that 3:45? Okay.
And can I also add that Richard, a reminder that Richard will actually be downstairs in the whatever it's called.
Yeah, right, no,
Senate
room,
chairs, all of the other CSU Senate chairs meeting. And assuming that gets done and completed when, so I'll be presiding to start with, but he is going to try to make it up in time by 4 so that he can be presiding when the faculty trustee is in the room.
Yeah.
That is our hope and intention. He doesn't trust me.
Well, the one thing that I'm thinking is there may be an opportunity when I've got the other chairs on campus if they're not running to the airport to take advantage of that. But my guess is they're all running to the airports. I would be able to come up with that. So with those changes, what was 3 as item 2 and at 3:30, and most of the other time certain as they are, does that sound good? No objections? Done.